This episode is brought to you by Essentia. A better you starts with better hydration. Essentia is on a mission to inspire people to do what matters most. Their proprietary ionization process transforms water from any source into ionized alkaline water, providing water that's 99.9% pure with a pH of 9.5 or higher. Essentia overachieving H2O, the number one ionized alkaline water. Shop now.
Welcome to Own the Microphone. Join me, Bridget McGowan, an award-winning international professional speaker and owner of the independent publishing company, BMAC Talks Press.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to today's episode of Own the Microphone. I am your host, Bridget McGowan. And today I have with me Rob Wybie Youngblood. Rob, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Bridget. Peace and blessings. It's good to be here with you.
I'm excited to have a conversation with you because I think we have similar energies and definitely similar levels of enthusiasm and passion for the microphone. Now, before you became a professional speaker, what did you do and how did you get into this world of professional speaking, Wybie?
Yeah, I was a college student when I attended the greatest HBCU in the nation.
No, you didn't. Here's the deal. I attended the greatest HBCU in the nation, and I know you did not grace the halls of Prairie View A&M University Prairie View, Texas.
You know, it's funny. I tell people if they want to argue, I'll give them a mirror to talk to themselves. They can argue with themselves. But Virginia Union is where I called home. I attended Virginia Union University. And when I graduated in 2004, I didn't have any employment prospects. You know, I was too focused on socialization. As a matter of fact, my degree should have been in social networking, but they didn't have such a degree at Virginia Union or any other institution. But when I graduated, I didn't have any prospects for full-time work. And I got started in direct sales. I had a frat brother approach me about an opportunity and I sat down with him. I saw value in the opportunity. And that was where I began to develop my communication and presentation skills. You know, going into homes, going into hotels, just doing just different things to develop my ability to speak. And when I started that, my mentor, my business coach told me, listen, you want to be this entrepreneur, but you need to get a job. You know, if you're going to build this business, you need to get a job. And I was thoroughly against that, but I took his advice and I started working for the Heart of Virginia Council's Boy Scouts of America, which put me in a position to do even more presentations in schools, in the community. And I developed my professional speaking niche. I remember the first time I received a check, I was meeting with a woman who had invited me to speak to her young men at her church. And at the end of the conversation, she slides me an envelope, kind of like that usher at church, right? They slide you the envelope. And I didn't open it in front of her because I didn't want to be embarrassed, nor did I want to embarrass her. But when I got in my car, Bridget, I saw that she had paid me $250 to speak to a group of young people, and my professional speaking career began. And I've been speaking for nearly 20 years. This year, this would be 20 years that I've been speaking professionally. So I was a struggling HBCU graduate. Then I got started in business and then I started working in a nonprofit arena before I became a professional speaker.
So Wybie, in that initial sales position, did you realize the conversations that you were having, the meetings that you were having? Did you realize in the moment you were honing public speaking skills or professional speaking skills, or it was on down the line that you realized that's what was happening?
No, actually I did, because we would go to conferences and I would see people on the stage. I would see people share messages. I would see people be impacted. And I said, I want to do that. Like, that's what I want to do. I want to be able to empower, inspire, and impact people to live out their God-given purpose. And you know, on a macro level, you know, we would do that from, you know, at the conferences. But on a micro level, we do that in living rooms and dens and being able to, you know, share a message. Now, obviously, some people didn't take too kindly to the business we were promoting, and you know, folks had negative things to say, and that's a part of the process, right? Whatever you do, some people are not going to understand, and they see it the way they see it. But I saw how my life was impacted, you know, by the gentleman who shared the concept with me, and I saw how other people's lives were impacted, and so I realized that it wasn't the business that was impacting people. It was the spirit of which the person who was delivering the message was able to inspire the people. I remember the first time I had heard a gentleman share this same concept, and I wasn't really impressed with him. But he shared with us that there were eight reasons why people would want to get started in a business in general. And the last reason was leave a legacy. And Bridget, I felt like a ton of bricks landed on my head when he said that, because I started thinking back to the fact that my father was murdered when I was two. I, at 21, I didn't get a knock at my door to say, here's your legacy. At 25, I didn't get a knock at the door to say, here's your legacy. It wasn't coming. So what I realized was that this opportunity would present me with the ability to not only impact other people, but to develop something that would allow me to leave a legacy to my children. At that time, I didn't even have any children, but I had to think, I had to forward think to to where I could break the cycle, so to speak, and not do what my father did or didn't do for me. So when I saw people on stage speaking and being able to impact lives with their stories and the challenges and the lessons and adjustments that they had to make, I said, I want to do that. And I've been able to do that for the last 20 years.
Well, I'm sorry to hear about your dad. I know he would be proud, I'm quite sure. You said something, and I'm paraphrasing. You said something that sparked a question for me. When people don't pick up what you're putting down, not everybody's hearing what you're saying. In that initial sales position, how did you push past that? Because it seems like you're the type where it was okay if you got a no. It was okay if you got a something that was in between a yes and a no, or just people weren't hearing you. How did it? Well, you seem like the type of person who was okay with that, and where you just kind of pressed the reset button, regrouped, and then moved on to the next meeting as if nothing had happened. How do you push back, let's say, problem audience members or people who aren't picking up what you're putting down?
So you're seeing the 20-year polish rob.
Okay,
So
take me back.
back then, no, I would back then I would get frustrated, you know, and every day I wanted to quit. Every day I wanted to give up, you know. But what I had to learn, first of all, when it comes to anything business related, whether it's speaking, whether it's coaching, whether it's consulting, I've learned over the years to have a decade by decade vision. And why, and that is important, because if something negative happens today, it pales in comparison to the decade journey. But if all I focus on is today and something negative happens today, then I'm blown out of the water. I can't see past today. And that was me at that time. I couldn't see past that time because I, you know, why would people say no to this? Or why would people, this is the greatest thing since sliced bread, right? But that was to me. And what I had to learn over the years was to stop speaking in my language and to start speaking in the language of the listener. And so what I also learned was that whenever we speak, we're really only talking to one person. Right? I had to learn this. These are lessons that I learned and has helped me to become much more effective as a speaker. That you have to focus on one person. There's one target. My biggest challenge is I was looking to impact everybody in the room. And I would be disappointed when I couldn't impact everyone in the room. But when I began to realize that I was only talking to the lookers, right? Even now, like when I come in, there's a specific target of demographic that I want to touch, and everybody else is just listening on the conversation, right? Because when I can speak to that person, which is a composite of multiple people, eventually they'll come up to me afterwards and they'll say, "Listen, that message was for me." And so what changed was I changed. I developed a reading habit, which made me bulletproof. I coached with my mentor, and he shared some things with me, lessons that were caught and not taught. Meaning you would only have you would have to be with that person in order to catch what they were putting down. And so I invested that time and I learned and I grew and I had to apply and I had to make mistakes. And so the polished Rob is able to tell you that the way that I handle adversity or challenging audience members is to actually bow up. I'm not gonna lie to you. I'm a native of the Bronx, New York. I don't have a problem with taking my glasses off, you know, and looking a person in the eye and say, sir, do we have a challenge? I don't like to use the word problem. Like, do we have a challenge? Now, obviously, if I'm in a professional setting, I have to be mindful because, you know, the people that brought me in, they're like, oh, love you. We didn't know that Rob was feisty like that, right? We know,
Okay.
you know what I'm saying? They might not have read that part in the bio of me being from the Bronx, but I do my best to maintain a professional demeanor. But I either ignore them or I use them as part of the conversation. As a matter of fact, I love it when I go and I speak to young people, and they might be a little rowdy. I've done this many times where I've invited them to the stage. I say, come on up on the stage. And now they're quiet, now they're scared. Or even if it's an adult, if they're heckling, come up on stage, sir. Love for you to come up and share your insight and wisdom. Because clearly you have a lot more than I do because you're talking while I'm talking, or you're interrupting, or you're feisty in the audience. And most times that kind of quiets them down. And so I've had to learn that through experience. But the biggest lesson in that was to be bold, told, and sold. See, if I'm locked in on my message and I'm locked in on my mission and I'm locked in on who I'm there to impact, I'm not going to let anyone derail me from that. And so, you know, but I've had to go through it a couple of times in order to get to this point in my journey.
Oh, yes, it is definitely a process of refinement and constant evolution being a professional speaker. Rob, YB Youngblood is on a mission to inspire people to live out their God-given purpose. He is an award-winning speaker and visionary business strategist who coaches entrepreneurs and executives to create credibility in the marketplace so they can increase their income, influence, and impact. YB is the author of two best-selling books. The first one is Speak Up, The Ultimate Guide to Dominate in the Speaking Industry. And the newly released Collaboration Creates Currency, The Blueprint for Visibility, Credibility, and Profitability. In many circles, YB is known as the LinkedIn locksmith because of his ability to empower his clients to use LinkedIn as a personal public relations tool that allows them to attract speaking opportunities, sell more books, and impact lives. YB is a proud husband, father of two teenage daughters, an active member of Alpha Phi Alpha Fraternity Incorporated, and a graduate of, we're not going to say the greatest HBCU in the nation. We're just going to say a graduate of Virginia Union University. Okay, so YB, when you present, what do you typically present on?
Yeah, my main topics are business networking, LinkedIn, and strategic consulting, where people become their own personal public relation consultant. And all of this came about. I remember when LinkedIn first came out in 2007. I wasn't quick to jump on it, but in my role of working with the nonprofit, I began to use it as a CRM, a customer relationship management tool, where every time I was in the community to promote our character education or career exploration programs, I would network and I would get business cards and I would follow up leveraging LinkedIn. And I amassed such a large network that eventually I began to use it as a tool to help job seekers to attract their next career opportunity. I remember I was working for a nonprofit and I had gotten laid off. And this is what I share with people in my story. No matter what I talk about, I always share my personal story. But I was laid off from a nonprofit position and I prayed to God that He would deposit in me something that would allow me to live for Him while utilizing my gifts and talents to be a blessing to others. And that's when He blessed me with my first company, YB Connects. And so YB Connects allowed for me to work with job seekers initially to show them how to leverage LinkedIn as a tool for attracting their next opportunity. But in 2016, I was blessed with the opportunity to connect with the number one motivational speaker in the world, Dr. Eric Thomas, ET the Hip Hop Preacher. And in his community, I began to leverage LinkedIn to show members who were entrepreneurs how to create revenue and how to leverage the tool as a PR tool. So I speak about LinkedIn, I speak about business networking, and I teach folks how to become their own personal public relations consultant.
What's your absolute favorite presentation you've ever delivered?
Well, I remember speaking to the Lynchburg Regional Business Alliance in Lynchburg, Virginia. And this is a chamber of commerce down there. And I remember giving a talk on being one connection away. And what was funny was I was coming down to talk about collaboration creates currency, but this message just came out of my spirit. And at the end of the presentation, now keep in mind, it was about 100 business leaders in the room. Many of them didn't look like me. At the end of the presentation, a gentleman walks up to me and he says, YB, is what you spoke to us about in your book? And I looked at him, I smiled, I said, not this one. And we both laughed. And the reason why that one stood out was because what I realized was that even though I was there to talk about collaboration creates currency, what I shared was seeds for the next book that will come out, that will allow me to impact lives. And so that one connection away presentation actually opened the door for more speaking opportunities with other chambers of commerce, which is a target that I have to work with chambers all around the country. So I would say that was my favorite conversation that I had with those business leaders.
Wow, that's awesome. In a little bit, you'll have the opportunity to ask me a question. Mm-hmm. Now, is there anything that you do before you deliver a presentation? Do you have a ritual, a practice, or anything like that? If so, what is it?
Yeah, I typically don't eat before I speak. I don't eat before I speak because I can get pretty excited. And, you know, if you know anything about the body, sometimes if you get overstimulated, some stuff might happen that will embarrass you. And if I'm on camera, people watching, I will never live it down. So I typically don't eat. I pray before I speak. And then when I come in, depending on the audience and the scope, to get the group hype, there's the mantra that I do whenever I speak. And, you know, it'd be difficult for me to share right now because I'm pretty animated when I do it. But I have this mantra that I do that gets me leveled. It keeps me focused, and it also allows for me to convert the nervous energy that I have, even as a professional speaker that's been speaking for years, to turn that into excitement. It's funny. I was talking to a group of young professionals, and the executive director of the nonprofit or the chamber that I was speaking to, she says, I'm nervous. And I whispered in her ear, I said, switch nervous to excited. And so when she got on stage, she said, I just want to thank YB for helping me because at first I was nervous, but now I'm excited. And there's a power of the spoken word. Like, when we say certain words, it creates a picture in our minds that tells our mind, this is what you should see. So if I say animal, people might be confused because, okay, which animal is he talking about? But if I say Dalmatian, you know exactly what animal I'm talking about. And so I've learned to program my mind by using that mantra. And what's amazing is I've been using that same mantra for the last 20 years, and it's helped me to be able to deliver power-packed talks that are impactful.
What do people get wrong about being a great public speaker?
That they're always going to get paid. You know, that they think that, you know, if somebody approaches them to do a pro bono talk, that is less, it's beneath them. And I tell people, listen, expert speakers know how to monetize free. Because it's not really free. Right. If you're strategic with your ability to build relationships and you know exactly what your next three steps are, so you can't just say, I'm speaking just to speak. No. You have to understand what's the purpose of this talk, who am I looking to interact with, who's in the room, and what am I going to do with the content once I've completed my conversation with these individuals? And do I have a book that I can promote or a coaching program or a consulting program? So there's a lot of folks who are just getting started in speaking. They're like, nah, I can't do free talks because I got to pay the bills. And you do have to pay the bills. If you're a professional speaker and this is all you do, yes, you do have to pay the bills. But we have to also be mindful that we're being interviewed as speakers. And so when you come in and you do a talk, whether it's paid or pro bono, that's an opportunity for you to make an impression that will last a lifetime. And that's one of the greatest things that I learned. But I think a lot of people get caught up in the fact that every time they speak, they're going to get paid. And you may not get paid monetarily, but you're going to get paid in terms of currency. And most people think currency is money, but it's not. Currency is relationships, it's ideas, it's information. The lessons you learn, if you are a student of the craft, every time you speak, you're learning something new that you can then take to the next engagement to make an impact. And so I think that's the biggest misconception is that you're gonna get paid every time you speak, and that might not happen. And then you might reject the opportunity because you expect to get paid, when in actuality, behind that possible objection is the opportunity of a lifetime. And we might reject that because we're short-sighted.
You know, YB, you made me think about an organization that I deliver a keynote for practically every year for the last several years. And what I love about it, the currency that I get paid, is I get this opportunity to test out new content, to try out a new keynote. I did it in January of this year, where and the organizer, she knows 9 times out of 10, Bridget's showing up with something she's never delivered anywhere else. Now, the audience doesn't know, and the audience cannot tell that it's never been delivered, because for my listeners who listen all the time, they know I practice my presentation full out all the way through a minimum of 3 times. So the audience doesn't know it's the first time, but the organizer knows 9 times out of 10 it's Bridget's first time. And I'll ask her for feedback on it, because she's also a professional speaker herself. I need to make sure I qualify that. You don't just get feedback from anybody. And she's not just a professional speaker, she's a dynamic professional speaker herself. So I trust her feedback. But that's a currency that I get from that engagement. And one, I get to do it from the comfort of my home since COVID hit. They have not gone back to in-person engagements, or at least for the event that I do with them, it's always virtual. So, you know, the top is professional and perfect, and the bottom is a mess and pajamas, probably. But that is what, or how I get paid, is this opportunity to test out new content and see how it lands, right? But I encourage people to do kind of what you were talking about, is think about what is of value to your business and to your profession. To your professional growth as a professional speaker, is it a list, an email list of everybody in the audience? Is the opportunity to sell your book, to pitch your programs? Is the engagement taking place in a city that you can also possibly double as a family vacation? Can you tag on a paid engagement while you're also doing that engagement? And then that relationship building, because that particular organizer for this event, I know if it ever makes sense, my name will come up in a conversation when she's in certain rooms and in certain spaces, because of the relationship she and I have built since meeting in 2016. But I'm blathering and rambling and going on. Okay, now you answered my question in terms of what do people get wrong about being a great public speaker financially, but how about performance-wise or delivery-wise, what might people get wrong when they're actually on the microphone?
The biggest thing that stands out for me is when a person rambles. The greatest tool that we have is the pregnant pause. Right? So we just did it just then, right? So when you can, when you can have the audience sitting at the edge of their seat, because every word that's coming out of your mouth, they're feasting on it, right? So I think most people think that silence is a negative thing, and it's not. Silence is your friend. It allows for you to get centered. It allows for you to get your composure, because here's the reality: you're going to be nervous. That's another thing. I don't care who it is. People still get nervous. But what the experts learn, once again, to transform that nervous energy into excitement. Some people, they turn it up a notch with their voice. And they like, once, like one of my mentors, Eric Thomas, man, he starts out on 100. But some people, they roll up into it. Or some people will rise and then they'll fall and then they'll get soft in their tone. So it's understanding that pregnant pause is your friend, but then also you don't want to be monotone.
Yes.
You don't have people falling asleep. It's like, wait a minute. Like, okay, I thought this dude was excited. Like, he's not excited. So you have to, so being able to learn other strategies other than talking. See, a lot of people think speaking is just talking. It's not. You know, you're having a conversation, but you're also engaging with the audience. And so if you're just focusing on talking, or if you're just focusing on just delivering a message and then getting off stage, no. I think another thing is what happens after you speak.
Yeah.
A big mistake that some people make is speaking and just getting out of here. Now, unless you got a flight to catch, that's a little different. But to stick around and answer people's questions, look them in the eye and let them share with you how they felt about your talk, positive or negative. It doesn't really matter. It's like, you know, I think one other thing is not capturing footage. You know, one of my mentors used to tell me, if you didn't capture the footage, you didn't talk. It didn't happen.
Exactly.
And even if you're not going to use the footage for public consumption, you still need to use the footage for your own training. Like you said, you use talks to test your content. Well, you want to be able to see, did I hit it? It's no different than an athlete reviewing film. You know, did I miss the tackle? Right? Man, how could I miss that layup? So those are a couple of things that I think, you know, people make mistakes on. From a delivery perspective, from a presentation, from a before and after, like you asked about having a routine. Some people just jump on the stage and start talking. No, you might want to pre-play that applause. You might want to pre-play your start, you know. Now it's funny because sometimes I'm a very spiritual guy, Bridget. And so I may be prepared. I may have all my slides and everything prepared, but with the Holy Spirit hit me with something different. I got to come on stage and give them what the Holy Spirit told me to give them. And obviously I'll talk to the meeting planners, and it'll still be in line with what the meeting planner wanted me to accomplish, which is another tip, right? You know, like we think we come to talk about us. It have nothing to do with us. It's important that we ask the meeting planner, what does success look like after I speak? That's the most important thing. Now, whatever the delivery and the words and the message, it'll come. But if we don't hit that, we'll get off that stage and they'll look at us like, nah, you didn't hit the mark.
Right.
And so having that ability to have that pre-conversation with the people who bring you in, it's not just a talk to get paid. It's a talk you want to get in. Like you said, I want to get invited back. If they give you 15 minutes to speak, take 13 and get off the stage. If you go over 15, it's a wrap for you. And whenever your name comes up in conversation, they're not going to say nothing. And that silence is golden. The other people are like, I get your point. Yep, we'll go to the next person.
Right? Who else is on our list?
Well, next.
You know, you were talking about a misstep that people will make is getting out of there and not talking to audience members afterwards. Because let me tell you, that one is so true. Let me tell you how valuable that is. Mm-hmm. There have been times when people will ask questions afterwards, mm-hmm. and you'll think, oh my goodness, that's a really good question. I'm adding that content to my presentation.
Absolutely.
Because it may have been something either I didn't cover, I wasn't planning on covering, or whatever the case may be. But it's like, oh, that is a gem that needs to be added. So talking with the audience members can provide you with additional ideas or additional content possibilities to further improve that talk for the next time. So I like talking
after,
to audience.
But before and after though, right? So it's not just after. I landed my biggest client, because I engaged him before I spoke. He didn't know I was the keynote speaker. He didn't know. And so I told him, I joked with him. I said, hey, I heard the guest speaker today is pretty good. He's like, yeah. I said, Yeah, I know him personally. I think he's good. So when I got on stage, you should have seen his face, like
You
just
ain't
kind of
right,
lit
YB.
up.
You ain't right,
Yeah, but
YB.
here's what I did though, as a result, because afterwards he sought me out. He bought a book. He took advantage of my consulting session, which was a LinkedIn profile makeover, and then he hired me for 90 days of coaching. Now, the beautiful thing about this happened, you know, some time ago. The beautiful thing about that experience was, as a result of the coaching that I provided him, he was able to help over 600 of his clients to attract $160 million in employee retention credits, because that was the nature of his business, because he became more active on the LinkedIn platform. He wasn't active at all when we connected, but he became active. He applied. He became one of the greatest students that I've had, and he has received the greatest benefit out of every one of the thousands of people that I've coached. And I'm like, hold up, I need to go out and do this again, right? I know we need to find some more folks like him. So I say that because, you know, we can take ourselves and our talk so seriously that we'll miss out on an opportunity to have a conversation before our talk, which we could possibly use in our talk, right? You know, we you know, say, hey, I just had an opportunity to run into Dean and you know, Dean, stand up real quick, you know. And so now that's eating into my time, but it's making me come across as much more personable, right? If they're looking for someone to be personable, that allows for me to hit the home run and to do those things. So, yeah.
There you go. There you
Yeah.
go.
Yeah.
Okay. YB, what is your question for me?
You know what? I love your energy. My question for you is, how do you leverage your talent as a speaker to attract more opportunities?
Right. It is connected to something that you've said multiple times in different ways. And that is making it about the audience. It is not about me. It is finding out what is a challenge, what is a pain point, what do I know or what can I do that connects to that challenge or pain point and that can make your audience better, that can make you better, that can make you shine. So that's how I leverage my talent is I think about because I'm going to show up high energy. I'm going to show up. You have two options. You can be memorable or forgettable, right? So I leverage that audience-centric attitude and focus. Even when I'm at the grocery store, YB, that cashier is the most important person on the planet right then in
Amen.
that moment while I'm standing
Amen.
there checking out, right?
Amen.
When I'm on the stage, and I make eye contact with someone in the audience. That person right there, right then, is the most important person in the universe. When I'm having the discovery call with the event contact, his or her needs, goals for their event, objectives and focus for their team members, those are the most important things right then and there. And I'm giving you 100%. So that's how I leverage my talent. I like making people feel important and seen and heard. I like doing that. And so I try to do that with every engagement I have, no matter who it is, whether it's formal or informal,
What?
whether it's on a stage or out and about, whether it's virtual or in person, it doesn't matter. Whether
Right.
it's on the phone, whether it's on Zoom, whether it's at my front door talking to the UPS guy, it doesn't
Right.
matter. As a matter of fact, our UPS guy who retired last year, like we became friends. He invited my husband's son and I to his retirement party.
Oh, wow. Wow. Well, you could tell. I mean, listen, you must be receiving a lot of packages if you build a relationship like that. I think that's amazing. I think that's amazing. I do want to ask another question. It has two components to it. The first one is, what would you say are your gaps and what are your goals as a speaker?
One of my gaps, YB, is storytelling. I do not do a lot of storytelling in my presentations. And there's a very specific reason why. I found out something several years ago that was quite life-altering. And I have been working through that. And I know stories are just kind of that mental hook that people grab onto that make presentations memorable, but there are other elements that can make presentations memorable. I mean, I've been doing this since 2001. If I didn't take advantage of other elements besides storytelling, I would have been out of business a long time ago. But yeah, I got some really, we'll call it crazy news that I had been processing for a long time. And I've never been comfortable with sharing a lot of personal stories. I think that's part of it because of that quote unquote crazy news. How I'm working through that is actually, it kind of goes back to that keynote that I deliver where I test out content. And in January of 2024, that keynote was the first one where I told as many personal stories as I had ever told in a presentation. So, but the answer to the second part of the question is how I'm filling those gaps is I'm just doing it. I'm ripping off the Band-Aid and I'm sharing the personal stories.
That's good.
And yeah.
I like that. I like that. I appreciate that. I appreciate my, one of my coaches said there's a difference between being transparent and vulnerable.
Yeah.
You know, transparent, obviously people can look in your house, right? They could look in the mirror out of the windows of your house, but vulnerable is when you let them into your house. And so I appreciate you being transparent and vulnerable at the same time.
Yeah. It's been a journey. It's been a journey. It will eventually be a book, but Lord knows when.
I'm encouraging people, especially every speaker should have a book for multiple reasons, but I'll give three. The first is because it allows for you to leave a legacy. And I talked about that in the beginning, right? How I was impacted by this speaker that I wasn't impressed by, but when he talked about the importance of leaving a legacy, that hit me like a ton of bricks. And so, you know, the two books that I had a chance to be a part of, because both books are actually collaborative book projects. Speak Up was put together by the Black Speakers Network, and it featured Les Brown and Dr. George C. Frazier and about 30 other talented speakers who we talk about how to dominate in the speaking industry. And I was able to contribute a chapter to teach speakers how to leverage LinkedIn to increase their network and net worth. And then Collaboration Creates Currency features myself and four of my clients who we share our stories of how collaboration created currency for us. But I was able to put that book together during my journey in the publishing arena. And so I discovered that for speakers, having a book is a great way to leave a legacy because we're all going to die. I mean, that's just the reality. Well, we don't know when the number is going to come at the end of our dash, but we all know that that number is going to come. And so by having a book, we get to live forever as long as you don't have folks burning books, right? You know, which some people are banning. They're banning books, but they ain't gotten to burning books yet. But your
send
book.
Send them the link, YB. Yeah. YB, send them the link to the ebook. Absolutely. They start burning.
Absolutely. Come on now. There's always a way to overcome that, right? So that's the first thing is leaving a legacy. The second is your book becomes a lead magnet. Right. So it you know, I was at once again, I was able to attract my biggest client because while I did not get compensated for that talk that I did for that chamber, the client that became my biggest client, he started out by buying a book. And then the third is it presents ways for you to promote more content. Right. So you have a book. I remember hearing a gentleman speak. I won't mention his name, but I remember hearing a gentleman speak. He came to Richmond, Virginia. I heard him speak. And as I'm listening to him speak, I found myself getting irritated. Bridget, I was getting annoyed. Like, I'm not going to lie to you. I was getting mad. I was getting angry. If I was Bruce Banner, I probably would have turned into the Hulk in that presentation.
What happened? happened? What
Because as he was
was
talking, as he was talking, I was getting mad because I said, hold up, I read this dude's book and his talk is talking about everything that's in his book. But here's what I didn't know. 99% of the people in the audience, they didn't have the book.
Right. They hadn't read the book. Yeah.
And so this was a valuable lesson for me. I easily calmed down after I realized something. He finished his talk. It was a 60-minute keynote. And after finish of at the talk, at the end of his talk, he invited people to go to the back to get copies of his book.
Absolutely.
And I stood there and I said, wait a minute. You're telling me that this dude wrote a book? He used the majority of his time to talk about situations in his book. And then he told people to go to the back of the room to buy the book. And 99% of the people bought the book.
How you
I
doing?
I need to do that. So that's why I'm telling people, for speakers, it represents a legacy tool. It represents a lead magnet, but it also represents an opportunity to leave an impression on people after you finish speaking to them, right? Because people will forget what you said, but they'll never forget how you made them feel. And so when they have the book, and that book maybe cover some things that you spoke about, they'll be reminded of your talk, and that will continuously make an impact on them.
Yep, without a doubt, without a doubt. Mm-hmm. Okay, YB, what's one last thing our listeners need to know in order to make sure they always own the microphone?
Yeah, the biggest thing is just operating your gift. And remember that your gift will make room for you. And whatever that gift is, you walk in it. You own it. Don't attempt to be like every other speaker. Be like the one that God created, and you will be blessed tremendously. Your gift will make room for you. And that's what it's done for me. I don't attempt to be like any other speaker. I'm just Rob YB Youngblood. I operate in my gift, and your gift will actually attract the people who have gaps that your gift will fill. So don't worry about impacting the world. Find the people with the gaps that only your gift will fill.
You heard it here first, everybody. Rob YB Youngblood, thank you so much for being on the show.
My pleasure, Bridget. You have a wonderful, blessed, and productive remainder of your journey in speaking.
And the same to you, my friend. To my listeners, thank you so much for tuning in. I am Bridget McGowan. Until next time, make sure you always own the microphone.